Running a business is hard enough. Don't make it harder with a dozen apps that don't talk to each other. One for sales, another for inventory, a separate one for accounting. That's software overload. Odoo is the all-in-one platform that replaces them all. CRM, accounting, inventory, e-commerce, HR. Fully integrated, easy to use, and built to grow with your business. Thousands have already made the switch. Why not you? Try Odoo for free at odoo.com. That's odoo.com.
Attention parents and grandparents. If you're looking for a gift that's more than just a toy, give them something that inspires confidence and adventure all year long. Give them a Guardian bike, the easiest, safest, and number one kids bike on the market. With USA-made, kid-specific frames and patented safety technology, kids are learning to ride in just one day. No training wheels needed. It's why Guardian is America's favorite kids' bike and the New York Times and Wirecutter's top pick 3 years in a row. This holiday season, Guardian is offering their biggest deal of the year. Up to 40% in savings on all bikes, plus $100 in free accessories. Guardian bikes have become the most sought-after gifts of the season, and inventory is going fast, so don't wait. Join over 500,000 happy families who've discovered the magic of Guardian. Shop now at GuardianBikes.com. That's GuardianBikes.com.
Hey everybody, it's Mark Patterson. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. Before we get to today's great guest, I just want to draw attention really quickly to my website, www.markpattersonnfl.com. There's a bunch of great stuff going on over there, like 275 plus podcasts. You can go in, get inspired, just like I do every day. We'll get to our rockstar guest in just a second. That's number one. Number two is I would appreciate any love on Apple by giving a review and ratings. And by doing that, it helps elevate the popularity of the show. We have talked about this before, but my award-winning Best Picture Emmy, there it is, the trophy, the hardware now, Searching for the Summit, Best Picture, the NFL shot of my journey up and down Mount Everest. You can access that through a link. And finally, we continue to raise money for Higher Ground. We have a campaign called Amelia's Everest. We've raised several hundred thousand dollars. It's fantastic and helps with empowerment of other people. Okay. Speaking of empowerment of other people, I want to bring in today my very close friend and guy who is now the head coach of the University of Connecticut Huskies, Jim Mora. Jim, how you doing?
Great, Mark. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Even better that you're here in Sun Valley, close to me. But listen, you are the head coach now. You've got your first year under your belt, and it's just absolutely miraculous what you and your staff were able to pull out in terms of where the school has been historically. I'm not sure exactly how many D1 teams there is, something like 131 or something, but at the bottom of that rung historically has been UConn, at literally the last rung, the last spot in that list. And I want to talk to you about really, and this really speaks not so much about let's talk football, but it's really about how you build a brand and how you gain recognition and all these different things that we'll get into. There's a bunch of subsets within that culture, belief system, personnel, which is coaches, players, and administrative folks. There's schemes that you came in, something you know new to all the players that came to the table. And of course, social media, which I think played a huge role, especially when you think about where you've been historically, which is 25 years in the NFL, 6 years at UCLA. And it seems like more than ever, there's a big slice that social media is really playing for that. But we'll get to that last. I want to just go back for the audience really quickly, and then I'm going to shut up and ask you, you know, you can dig in, but just to kind of reconstruct what happened with UConn, I want to go back to 2018, 1-11, 2019, 2-10, 2020, didn't even play. All these other teams are showing up. They didn't even show up to play. There was no, so you have to count that as zero wins against 12 potential games that we would have played. 2021, last year, 1-11. This year, 6-6. And it's very possible that that number could have been 7-5 or 8-4. I mean, that is definite possibility where you were ahead in the game at certain points right down to the end, and then things went the other way. But that, so much of what happened was about mindset. And by the way, when you combined that record together, I believe it's 4 wins and 44 losses over 1, 2, 3, 4 years. And then you come in and you do your thing. So let's start off with when you first were offered this job a year ago and the massive challenge that you were under. What were you thinking in terms of what needed to happen as I'm talking about step one, because there were like 100 steps in there, but step one, where did you want to start?
Step one was defining what we wanted our culture to be. And people talk a lot about culture, but I'm not sure they ever define it. And we needed to define it. And you know, culture is how you treat each other, how you talk to each other, what your expectations are, what your standards are, how you act, how you enforce your standards aren't, you know, necessarily living up to it. It's the living and breathing essence of any organization. So we had to come in and establish what we wanted to be culturally as a team. And we got into the weeds with it as a staff. I had a very firm belief in what I felt was necessary. And, you know, being the head coach, you're the leader, and you know, the leader sets the culture, but everyone else kind of enforces it. And, you know, culture is strongest when the players are saying the same things and the players are enforcing the things that the coach says. So I felt like in order for us to start down the right path initially, I needed to develop trust with these players, and I needed to infuse them with a passion that that they hadn't maybe had in a while. You know, they'd lost. And so I came in there strong, like I always do, and talking about the things that, you know, we could accomplish if we took certain steps along the way to make sure we accomplished those things. And I was very fortunate to hire a really good staff of like-minded men, good motivators, excellent teachers, trustworthy people. Men that cared about men and women, because I do have a woman on my staff, but men and women that cared about the players as people first and were also trustworthy. So the building that trust amongst the players was critical. It was a critical first step, because once they trust you, they'll follow you. Once they trust you, they'll buy into what you're saying. Once they trust you, you know, when maybe they want to question something a little bit, they'll give you the benefit of the doubt. And you have to earn that trust every day. And I've really tried hard to do that. And I think we've done a good job of that.
So let's talk about, you know, you and I climbing around the mountains here in Sun Valley for really, you know, the prior like 6 months and leading up to this and actually going back there and living in Storrs, Connecticut. And everything that just came out of your mouth, I think you could probably get that same line from pretty much any coach, aspiring coaches, that's a head guy or has been a head guy that's trying to get out there about belief system and buying into it, but not everybody that happens to, right? And right. So flipping this on the other side. So now you come in with this belief system and this mantra and, you know, having it trickle down vertically integrated from, you know, the people at the bottom, whoever those people are, to the people, you know, as you work your way up to the top, the offensive coordinator and the other coaches. But what did you find in terms of the players? Like you went back there, and this wasn't like when you took over UCLA, you came into a team that I am guessing this like was 5-7 or 6-6 or something like that. So they still won five
games.
Yeah, they won 5 games, but you know, it's a program that's historically had a lot of success, you know, even though it was here and there. And now you're going into a culture where there's been no success. And so even though I know you're walking in with that mindset, what did you find on the other side of that fence that you looked at the same thing, like, this is a massive challenge. This is way bigger than what I thought.
What I found was apprehension initially, as you would expect, you know, when you go into a new job and a new person comes in and the players are there and they've heard it all before. One thing that helped me is I had credibility. I'd been a head coach in the NFL. I'd been a head coach at a program where we'd had success. I'd been on TV, so they'd seen me. So I had some credibility with them. But The first thing we had to do is kind of weed out some of the guys that I didn't think were going to fit, either from a scheme standpoint or a mindset standpoint. And so we whittled that down a little bit, and we kept the core. And the core was surprisingly resilient. I mean, these guys, as you said, they've been through so much, and yet it didn't get them down. They were so anxious to do whatever, you know, we felt was necessary to become a decent to good to growing football team. And what I found, Mark, was a whole bunch of guys that lacked a sense of entitlement. And I think entitlement is something that's a negative in our culture today. I think there's sometimes, you know, people that believe that they deserve something rather than have to go out and earn it. And what I found was a bunch of guys that were so willing to go out and earn whatever, you know, they were going to get, they were going to achieve. They didn't believe anyone owed them anything. And it was so refreshing. And every day, that sense of competitiveness and sense of, you know, just dying to do whatever was asked of them to get better, of not feeling entitled, of wanting to work for it, competing every day, it just continued to grow. And it became an incredibly, incredibly close football team, probably the closest football team I've ever been on. And for sure, the least entitled group of players I'd ever been around. So it wasn't hard to change their mindset. And then they just needed to win, right? And they needed to be taught how to win. And they needed to know what it took to win. Because it's more than just wanting to win. I mean, heck, everyone wants to win, but it's the work that you have to put in. And it's the trust that you have to garner amongst each other. And it's the commitment you have to make every single day, every single moment of every single day. It can't be something you pick and choose. And these guys were just willing to do the work. And it was very, very rewarding to be around those guys.
So the first thing I have written down on my list is the culture. And you talked about that, you know, changing the mindset, changing the culture. Mm-hmm. And probably more important than just changing the culture, but is this sub of the next thing that follows after you said, I may determine this is the way I want my program to run. And then having various people buy into that is now your belief system. And belief system just comes through confidence. I got to tell you that when I was back in Storrs, Connecticut, I went back, as you remember, for 3 or 4 days just to come out to spring ball and watch and enjoy. I love doing that stuff. And what I saw was might be the worst collection, I'm not going to say as athletes, but just in terms of technique and where to be and building up their bodies and doing all those things necessary, which are you ultimately got those people to believe, and you pulled off some unbelievable upsets. I think Vegas put you that you wouldn't win any more than 2 games, you know, at the very beginning of the season, and you blew past that. So what I'm asking is between spring ball and then going into fall, where did you see like the switch finally start to go on in terms of there's some of the players on the team believing that what you were saying, if they did this, then that could happen, because they certainly played way above their abilities, in my opinion.
I think it was a continual progression towards that. I don't think there's ever a time that the switch really was on or off for me. The day that I felt like we had realized that we could be better than they'd ever thought they could be was when we actually lost a game. You know, we'd been through a gauntlet of teams that were really good. Syracuse, North Carolina State, Michigan took our lumps, but I never felt like any of the guys were giving in or giving up, or were, I mean, you're always affected by a loss, but they weren't going to be long-term affected. It wasn't affecting their morale. We won a couple games. We went to Ball State and we had a good lead at halftime when we lost. It was the first time that I felt like they were really pissed, really disappointed, really upset that we lost, that they were not accepting defeat anymore, that they just had enough of it. They learned how to win. They learned what it felt like to win. They knew we should have won, or, well, I hate to use the word should have. We had an opportunity to win and we didn't capitalize. And to me, that was kind of like, if you talk about a turning point, because I recognized the expectations had really risen and our standard had risen and losing was not acceptable and it wasn't okay. And you don't just get over it. And to me, that was a big, big, big point in our development. But I felt like just all along, they just every day they were making gains. Every single day they were making gains. I mean, even when we didn't have organized things, they had player run practices. They had workouts on their own. There was hardly a weekend day that I'd walk into my office just because I'd go check in on my office or my house is right there, as you know. And there wouldn't be, you know, the whole team or part of the team out there working. And I've never been exposed to a group that worked the way these guys work. So I think it just, they had a desire to be good. And now they had someone that was, you know, or a staff that was showing them what it takes to be good and making heavy demands on him, putting, you know, making them accountable, being demanding. And yet along the way, you know, like we say, we coach them hard, we love them harder, you know, making them feel like we were all in this together. And if we all did it as best as we could every day, that we could get this thing going in the right direction.
I love that. I love that. Next thing as we go down and we talk about that, there's this great book and it's called Good to Great. I don't know if you've ever read it, but one of the things that he talks about,
I read the first line of it.
Yeah. Good to Great. So yeah. the book is by Jim Collins. Okay. And one of the first things he establishes in becoming from good to great, and in terms of business sense, there's a lot of great companies who were good, like Comp USA, if you remember that company years ago. There's many other examples like this, which didn't make hard pivots when they had to, and then market changed, and then they ended up going bankrupt. And there's other companies like Apple who had to take a hard pivot, which they did, and became very innovative, along with Steve Jobs and everything. So there's these various companies that he compares to of companies that thrived versus companies that didn't. In your case, or actually staying on the same theme, one of the things he talks about is getting the right people on the bus, okay? And I think that's one of the things that you were saying initially and what you were describing is in terms of changing out some of the personnel, but just not the personnel on your team in terms of the players. It's also getting the right type of people in your administrative and your coaches that were buying into the right system. I think if I remember right, there is something like, I don't know, 30-ish players that ended up leaving the program. They just didn't meet the goals that where you're trying to go. You had something like 30, roughly the same number of personnel that you know, exchanged that were there either the year before, the years before, that were part of that losing culture that you said, look, we have to get the right people on the bus. And if they're not on this bus and we're not all going in the same direction, then they need to go someplace else and do whatever they want to do.
Well, that book that you talk about, Good to Great, the very first line in that book is good is the enemy of great.
Yeah.
And that's really all you need to know about the book is if you accept good, you'll never be great. And interestingly enough, in my very first team meeting, I mentioned that book and those words, good is the enemy of great. And if we start accepting good, we won't be great. If we start saying that was good enough, that was pretty good, that'll do, then we'll be average. We'll never be great. And so, you know, one of the important things is identifying the players, the people in the program that subscribe to that philosophy, you know, that good was not enough for them. They wanted to be great. And populating not only your team with those types of players, but staff members with that type of mindset. And I think we've done a good job of that. It's never perfect and the job's never done. And, you know, I there's a couple other words I hate, and that's, hey, we got it, or I got it, you know, and I don't like that either. Hey, I got it. That means, you know, you're about to start going this way. If you think I got it, I've reached the peak, you know, you start going that way. I've been around some really talented players in my career that always felt like I got it. And they never realized their talent because they just gave in and didn't keep pushing greatness. And one of the fun things about being in the situation I'm in is I think it's very lucky. It's a stroke of luck is that most of the people that are in our program are highly, highly motivated. And I think part of that is that it's very young. Like my coaching staff is very young. These players, as I said, you know, these weren't the highest recruited players in the country, Mark. These were, you know, it was UConn. I mean, they were, you know, they weren't 4-, 3-, 5-star guys. And so they've been used to working for it. And that's refreshing.
It's called overachievers, right? Something that's new.
Or reaching your potential, you know, every day. Reaching your potential every day. I don't know that. I don't really like to use the word overachieving, because if you achieve it once, then you're able to achieve it every time. So to me, and like we stayed on message all year, it's like, let's max out every day. Every day, let's max out. Every single day, let's reach our potential every single day. And if we can do that with consistency, then people may say, wow, they overachieved. But we know, no, we didn't overachieve. We just achieved what we're capable of.
Yeah.
At this point, we got to keep getting better.
Well, yeah. And then part of that too is that you never really truly know what your ceiling is. And I think that's where when people either cap you at a certain ceiling, mm-hmm. that's when you know, that word potential, which your dad used to always talk about, yeah. you know, the potential really means that you haven't realized your full talents of where you can right. go, because that's what that word means, is potential. It's just yeah. like yeah. you've actually failed. And that whole thing, something that's different from the way when back you and I go back to playing college ball, I think we first met each other in 1979 or 80, something like that, way long ago. And back in the day, the way the rules were is that if you didn't feel like you're in a position where you're going to play at a particular school, then you were kind of stuck there. And if you wanted to leave, you was kind of like it was double jeopardy, because you had to sit out more or less for 2 years before you could come back. So it just didn't favor anybody to leave. In today's world, there's this thing called the transfer portal. Tell me how that has really benefited what you guys are trying to do in terms of building a championship mindset, and in terms of, you know, everybody's always looking for better talent, right? That's just the way it is, yeah. whether you're Georgia, who's sitting at number one right now, or whether you're a UConn team?
Well, it gives you opportunity to add experienced and talented players to your roster quickly. And that is certainly helpful. There are some traps, though. You know, we talked initially about culture and, you know, the type of people you want and the type of mindset you want in your locker room. And, the more you tap into the portal, the more chance you have of getting somebody that's maybe more just a mercenary, a one-year guy, doesn't really have a team-first attitude. Mm-hmm. And so you really have to vet those players and make sure that they fit what you want, not just on the field, but off the field. So there are great opportunities to get tremendous young men that are tremendous players, but you have to be careful, because you can destroy the chemistry of your locker room very, very quickly. And that's something that we're very careful about. But in terms of the ability to add talented players very quickly that can help you win, it's a big time deal. You know, it's big. I think if there's a negative to it, it's that you see so many players that go into the portal because they're not getting opportunities where they are. And they maybe have an overinflated estimation of who they are as a player, and they never land anywhere. You know, and so they enter the portal thinking they're going to go get a scholarship somewhere else, and now they're out. And so they, you know, I think you have to move with extreme caution when you use the portal as a program or as a player.
Yeah, you know, I look back at, again, both of our situations, and you started playing before me just a little bit. It took me.
I ran down on a kickoff.
Well, whatever. but whatever. You were still out there playing before I was. And yeah. you know, for me, there was a lot of hardship, and I really didn't see the light of day until my third year. And even at that was special teams. But the point being is that, you know, I think I find this, I'm not sure what side of the fence I'm on with this when a kid is going through a struggle, maybe the best thing to do is for that kid to stay exactly where he's at and go through this struggle, so that when he comes out the other end, it certainly made me work harder, have a much greater desire. I really never had to work like that in high school, because I could just roll out of bed and do it. And it was just like, okay, this is sink or swim time now. And so you either got to like button up your game and get after all these things that our Hall of Fame head coach Don James, you know, put in front of us, you know, getting bigger, faster, stronger, knowing the game, doing well in classroom, doing all those different things. And in today's world and environment, if things aren't going exactly quite right, you've got this thing called a transfer portal. And so, again, kind of back to your point, at which point do you realize your potential? If the only test that you're being tested on is that, oh, I'm not playing, so I'm going to bail and go someplace else, and then you kind of restart that whole thing again.
Well, I think that's part of it, but that's not all of it. Oftentimes, you know, players that didn't have opportunities coming out of high school, that have developed now, maybe at a lower level or a smaller school or in a smaller conference, have proven they're good players. Now they have a chance to go to an Alabama or a Georgia or a, you know, Michigan or Ohio State and play at the highest level. So that's one part of it. And then there's coaching changes, you know, that drastically affect the situations of each player when coaches leave or are fired. And so there's an opportunity now for guys to improve their place. And so kind of going back to what I was saying about being careful about who you let in your program, when you go to the portal, I think a really important question to ask, and to not only ask, but to really kind of feel, is why is this guy leaving this school? Yeah. Because if it's because he's a whiner and he didn't think he got a chance and he doesn't really want to work for it, kind of what you were describing, then, man, do you really want that? You know, I don't, you know, because you and I were raised by a coach that he demanded and you had to work. And if a kid is telling me, yeah, I'm just not getting a chance there, the coaches don't like me, you know, I'm the victim. Boy, that's a tough one for me. You know, I don't necessarily want to embrace the victim mentality. So that's part of the evaluation process, because what you said is true in many cases, but there are other cases too. So it's just every case is a different situation. You have to really do a good job of evaluating it, but you don't want to fill your team with a bunch of victims. You know that.
Yeah. I want to go back to something you said earlier, and you said that the kind of where the you felt as though the switch went on in terms of like having that full belief system was against Ball State. When you guys were ahead most of the game, it got down to the final 5 minutes, and then a couple things happened and they went ahead and they ended up beating you. I don't know if they're a ranked team or not, but they were certainly a good team and a team with a record, and they're probably going to go to a bowl game. To me, it was interesting because where I saw that belief system really kick in was against Utah State. The very beginning of the season, I was there in Logan, Utah, and you guys were up 14. And it's just they hadn't experienced enough life yet of football life, I guess you'd say, of understanding how to get up, which that you guys did early in the game by 14. And you had everything wrong going for you in terms of your starter going down, probably the first 8 plays or something, gone for the season. It was horrific. And then you put in a freshman and then off you go. But, you know, getting in there and not just staying in front, but holding on to that and then surging from there. And that was like as much probably of a lesson learned about that game as it was against Ball State or even maybe Army, where, you know, you really, in my opinion, were the better team out there. And you just didn't bring it all on that day. And if the three phases of the game, offense, defense, special teams, everybody didn't play to their full potential. And at the end of the day, you didn't win those games. But what great learning opportunities.
Yeah, those were three games that haunt me. You know, Utah State, I think your point is, you always talk about, you know, learning how to handle adversity and pushing through adversity, and I don't know that we talk enough with young people about how do you handle success? You know, like what is your mindset when all of a sudden you're having some success that maybe you didn't think you were going to have? And so I think one of my failures going into that game is I thought it was going to be a really hard game, and it ended up being that. I didn't see us jumping out 14 to nothing. You know, I thought there was a chance that we might be behind 14 to nothing, have to come screaming back. And so I didn't talk enough about, hey, we're going to get a lead on these guys and here's how we're going to handle it. You know, you talk all the time about, hey, if someone gets a lead on it, here's how we're going to handle it. A lead on us, here's how we're going to handle it. Ball State, I don't know. It was a strange one. And then Army, too. But I think we learned a lot from all our losses. I don't know what the lesson from Army is yet. I know what the lesson from Utah State and Ball State were. But those three games, you know, you're right. Like, I hate to ever say we should have won a game, but we absolutely had an opportunity to win all three of those games. And it's not like a lot had to happen. And so it wasn't officiating. It wasn't the weather. It wasn't anything. Yes, it was our opponent. I never want to say it wasn't our opponent, but I look at all three of those games like you do, and I say, that was on us. That was on us. That was on me. That always starts with me. And so those are the games I go back and evaluate the most in terms of like, where were we off or where was I off that little bit that didn't enable us to finish a team? And that's, as you know, that's, man, those games stay with you forever.
I know the actual clock time is 60 minutes in a game roughly, but it's really showing up for each play. And those, I don't know if it's a 30 second by the time that you go and you line up and quarterback counts it down, or if you're on defense and you execute the play and the play then ends, it's 30 seconds of hardcore concentration for 60 minutes. It's really 3 hours or something, you know, when you roll everything into it. But that is what separates, you know, a lot of these things that you guys have done in the past and your successes. How much, I know you've coached, let's go back to the NFL for a minute, 25 years in the NFL as an assistant coach and the head coach, and you've been around significant amount of Hall of Famers. Is there any characteristic with those guys, one through line, that you ever relate to your players? And I'm thinking, again, going back where you're 28 and a half point underdogs against Utah State, and you go out there and you're 14 in the first quarter, and like, this is a miracle. Like, this is like, I can't even believe this is happening. But, you know, something that maybe it's not that game necessarily, but there's a through line where for the whole season that you can say, you know, Jerry Rice did this, or Ronnie Lott did that, or Morton Anderson, you know, there's this same consistent behavior that they did that created that championship mindset.
Well, the key word is, you just said, it's consistent. First of all, they never compromise their standard for themselves or for their team in terms of their work ethic, their discipline, their attention to detail, the way they practiced, the way they met, the way they took care of their bodies. The way they watched film and the routine that they got in to get ready for a game, they never deviated from that. They never compromised it ever. I think they all played one play at a time, and they all just played with great intensity and passion one play at a time. I think that they had confidence that was built from the fact that they knew that they'd done the work. They put in the work. So when you know you've done the work, you have confidence. When you have confidence, then you can play fast. And when you can play fast, then you're going to make plays. And so I think it all goes back to, like I said, is never compromising your standard. And your standard has to be the highest standard, the standard that commands respect, really an internal respect that you have for yourself, but the respect of others. And Ronnie Lott talked about that all the time. You know, you play this game for many reasons, but one of them is you play a way that commands the respect of yourself. So you know that when you go to bed at night, you've given all you can. You play this game in a way that commands the respect of your teammates, your opponents, your fans, and everyone that ever watches the game. And, you know, that's just something I constantly harp on with these young players that I'm around is, you know, you said I've been around, you know, over 40 Hall of Famers. I had zero to do with them getting to the Hall of Fame, but they have everything to do with the way I coach. And being able to kind of access some of the lessons I learned in watching those guys and tell the players about it, I think it makes a huge impact on them, because they know all these guys. They know who they are. They know who Ronnie Lott is. And so I'm always just trying to draw on the lessons that I learned from the greatest of the greats.
So when you started the season, there's all these things, culture, belief systems, personnel, systems, and now we're going to jump into, in the final category here, is social media, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me what social media has done, because I know you actually hired, I don't know this exactly, but almost like a social media team that, and I've seen a lot of the stuff that's come out, these mini movies, and I'm sure your players enjoy and your fans enjoy it, but how has that affected your recruiting in terms of giving you guys more exposure that's out there?
Big time. So we hired a director of creative content from LSU. He hired an assistant, and then he created a team of 20 students from UConn that worked tirelessly just to pump out content. And as you said, the mini movies, the videos, the graphics, the information. So it helps in recruiting because, you know, you're getting more eyes on your program, and there's seeing positive things about your program, reading about your program, starting to get a better feel for who you are. You're not just UConn, you know, a word that they hear. You're a true program. There's visuals that people can see. And then it helps with our local marketing. It helps with our engagement with our fans and our alumni and our former players. It allows us to kind of control the narrative of the stories that go out, you know, and we're never going to do anything that's not genuine, but you know, we can tell compelling stories that engage people. And our social media team is critical. And we put money into it. And, you know, the recruiting aspect is, you know, recruiting is the lifeblood of your program. And besides the NIL, there's nothing that's probably more important than your facilities and then your ability to give your players exposure as they become, you know, people that others want to read about. And we're able to do that now. And it's a big part of our success.
Well, what you're doing is you're going to where the kids are. Making the kids go to where you are, and that's a brilliant move. And you know, most of the big programs are doing that because they realize it and understand it, and I think it's effective, and that's the bottom line.
Yeah, if we can't expect every student to like, you know, go look up at UConn football, but we can push content out that somebody retweets that they know, so it's on their feed, and then all of a sudden they're exposed to us, and you know, we grab their attention, and then they delve a little bit deeper, and then there's an interest. So it's critical. And our guys work so hard at it, and they're really, really, really good. And they work with our players on our NIL stuff. Like, they help our players promote themselves with the new NIL, name, image, and likeness rules that are in effect. So they're very critical to our success as a program.
So final question here. You guys, when you first started the season, the goal is to become bowl eligible. And to do that, you have to at least win 6 games, right? You guys have now done that. It appears that you're going to go to a bowl. You're going to find that out here, I'm sure, in the next week or two. How do you now get your players under the mindset of you've achieved your goal? Because your goal was to be bowl eligible, right? I don't know if you actually put a number, whether it was 7-5 or 6-6 or 8-4 or what, but your goal is to become bowl eligible. And none of these kids have ever understood what that has meant, right? Because of where they have been. What we talked about, going 4-44 over the last 4 years, did not even play in 2020. So now that you've achieved that goal, because I know you're in your mind, whatever you go after, you're going to want to win, right? And so what's the message now when they've kind of plateaued, yet, you know, they're like at Camp 4 at 26-5 on Mount Everest?
Yeah.
And metaphorically speaking, you know, you can see the top, you can see the bowl game, you can see the top, and the top is 29,032, right? And for you, it's going to play this game and perform and try to beat whatever opponent they put you against. Like, how do you get them, like, that isn't the summit. Camp 4 is not the summit. Summit is still in front of you.
Well, I think it's pretty straightforward. We're 6-6. If we play a bowl game and win, we're winners. We have a winning record for the first time in a long, long time at UConn. If we lose, we're 6-7. And we don't have, I'm not going to say we're losers, but we don't have a winning record.
Yeah.
You know, so right now we're at average. We're 6-6. We're average. We have a chance to be above average, to be able to say, hey, this was a winning season. Or we can be 6-7 and say, well, we didn't win the majority of our games. And so that's what the focus will be on. And I think that that's enough for these guys, because it's very important for them to win. And they've been through so much. They've worked so hard. They've stayed so committed that I don't think it's going to be hard to get them motivated. Now, going to a bowl game, as you and I both know, there's some distractions out there that we're going to have to make sure that we avoid. But you get that little wise smile, because we both know what we're talking about. There's things that happen at bowl games. Oh. So we just have to do a great job of keeping them focused. And like we always say, keep the main thing the main thing. And the main thing is preparing as hard as we can, as best as we can, as thoroughly as we can, to try to get a win on game day.
You said something, I'll end it with this. You said something when everybody was jumping for joy when you're at least 6-6, and they were like, isn't that just amazing that you got 6 wins? And you said, well, I got fired at UCLA for having 6 wins, which you did. Yeah. And so you know that, like, you know, where you're going is still way up here, and you're still trying to hit that summit. And so I think it really, to me at least, it really, once again, it's just not your players, but it's also your coaches and your media and everybody else involved in your program, that that being 6-6 is not where you want to be. It's a step in the process, but it's not the ultimate destination. And I think that was as good a message as I've heard of all the things that you've said this season.
Well, to put it in terms of your mountain climbing terms, as I see it, we're at base camp. And we went up into Kumba Icefall when we played Syracuse, North Carolina State, and Michigan. And somehow we survived. But we went back to base camp and regrouped. And then we made a couple of other trips up there, but we haven't even got to camp one yet. Like we haven't, you know, we're still trying to figure out how to get through the ice fall, but we're alive, right? We're alive and kicking. So for anyone that would think that, you know, man, they made it through and they're on their way, I would argue, you know, and I really shouldn't have to argue because I kind of know. And I think it's important to keep things in perspective. If you're not always trying to get better, you're going to lose ground. We were talking about this yesterday, you and I, on our hike, is you can't let 6-6, which is average, mask the deficiencies that you still face in your program. And you have to constantly address them. And while everyone's excited because, oh my God, they won 6 games. And as you said, they've only won 4 in the last however many years. It's like, yeah, but let's go back to Utah State. Let's go back to Ball State. Let's go back to Army. Let's figure out why we weren't more competitive against Syracuse, North Carolina State, and Michigan, you know, and let's really dig deep and be hard on ourselves. And if we can do that and still keep a positive attitude, which we will, then we have a chance to make a lot of improvement.
Love it. Love it. Where can people find you? When I say you, it's UConn, on Twitter. Where's the best place?
At Jim Mora Football. Jim Mora FB.
Jim Mora FB. Okay, there he is. And also, people, if you go on to Twitter, you can look up UConn, and they've got all kinds of great content going on there. So get caught up with the revolution that is UConn football. And these guys are going places. So it's been fun to get caught up and do kind of a recap of the season, and nothing but good luck moving forward. So on that note, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you. It's fun.
All right. There he is. The one, the only Jim Mora. Thank you.
Guess what, friends? Your next beach vacay is still on sale at CheapCaribbean.com, but not for long. You can unlock $500 off site-wide vacation packages now through December 9th. Plus, Cheap Caribbean has tons of exclusive hotel deals to top-rated all-inclusive resorts in Mexico and the Caribbean. Cyber Week is also the perfect time to gift yourself something tropical this holiday season. Just go to CheapCaribbean.com to unlock your $500 off. Hurry, this awesome offer ends December 9th.
Attention parents and grandparents. If you're looking for a gift that's more than just a toy, give them something that inspires confidence and adventure all year long. Give them a Guardian bike, the easiest, safest, and number one kids bike on the market. With USA-made, kid-specific frames and patented safety technology, kids are learning to ride in just one day. No training wheels needed. It's why Guardian is America's favorite kids bike and the New York Times and Wirecutter's top pick 3 years in a row. This holiday season, Guardian is offering their biggest deal of the year. Up to 40% in savings on all bikes, plus $100 in free accessories. Guardian bikes have become the most sought-after gifts of the season, and inventory is going fast, so don't wait. Join over 500,000 happy families who've discovered the magic of Guardian. Shop now at GuardianBikes.com. That's GuardianBikes.com.